Welcome to the Naturally Nourished Podcast that delivers cutting-edge food as medicine solutions for optimal health. Ali Miller is a nutrition expert sought out by the media and America's top medical institutes for her revolutionary functional medicine interventions. From disease treatment to prevention, every episode will empower you with ways to put yourself back in control of your health. Please note, the topics discussed are for educational purposes only. Now welcome, Integrative Dietitians Ali Miller and her co-host Becky Yu.
Welcome to the Naturally Nourished Podcast. You are joining us for episode 388, and today we are doing an almond deep dive. In this episode, we will cover how almonds have blown up in the health food space, and as discussed in episode 385, reducing exposure and impact of glyphosate, over 85% of almonds are actually heavily treated with glyphosate. So this kind of sent Ali down a little bit of a rabbit hole in terms of researching some of our favorite household products, things we've recommended in the past, things we buy and feed our family all the time. And you'll be surprised to know that a lot of our staple products actually probably have a little too much glyphosate for comfort.
Yes. In today's episode, we will cover our honest take on almonds and how we both personally and in our households plan to make shifts, as well as covering the concepts of oxalates and anti-nutrients, if blanching matters, and then potentially better alternatives when we look at staples and products that we use regularly, daily. Yes. So maybe reduction of frequency, maybe some swap outs. We'll cover it all. And we'll even include some information on the sustainability and production impact on almonds on our ecosystems, our water scarcity. And needless to say, I will be reducing my dependency, but I still feel that organic almond flour is superior to a gluten-free blend, generally speaking, because those get highly processed and high glycemic index. And as we talked about in the episode, sorghum, which is often in a lot of these blends, is actually genetically modified, if not organic, often. And so that would have even higher residue because of that GMO resilience.
Yep. So I think it means that we won't be like never making an almond flour muffin again.
Yes.
We'll just be more strategic about our sourcing. We'll be sure to update our Amazon store with products we can actually feel like we can stand behind. And I think a lot of this is stuff that like I knew in the back of my mind, but I didn't want to really know it, right?
You won't be able to look away after this episode.
Exactly.
Yes.
Before we get into all that, let's just have a quick word from our sponsor, speaking of reducing glyphosate exposure, Dry Farm Wines.
Yes. I just thought that this would be really timely to include a call to action to go on over and check out Dry Farm Wines. When you go to dryfarmwines.com/AliMillerRD, you can add a bottle of clean, lab-tested, glyphosate-free, sustainable, biodynamic, and natural wine to your cart for just a penny. Dry Farms is an amazing brand that does extreme vetting and works with small family producers. They work with old growth vines, so the hence dry farm. There means that there's not a lot of water irrigation to rapidly get to the weight of the grape. And also that means less chemical input. They also ensure that there's the most minimal intervention in the viniculture and that they use wild native yeasts, no GMO yeasts, which are used in a lot of wines. They use no flavor alteration, no filtering or refining. They use minimal use of old oak, which comes with its own issues of toxicity and histamine. No addition or minimal natural occurring sulfites only. It is the wine that you can drink that you can actually cheers to your friends and family and know that you are getting some health supporting benefits of the resveratrol, the antioxidants, the gut microbiome support without the chemical input, the increased neurotoxin influence from the agricultural system, especially if we look at California wines, for instance. And like Becky mentioned, in our episode 385, we talked about grape being one of the top 10 highly sprayed foods, which extends and actually can only get more contaminated when we're talking about wine. So if you choose to indulge in alcohol, we always like to choose less toxic is best. Support your body, of course, with naturally nourished detox packs. But if you're choosing wine, go on over to dryfarmwines.com/AllieMillerRD. We'll also link in our episode show notes, episode 240 that we did with Todd, their owner, their CEO, on is your wine more toxic than you think? And we include some hangover prevention in that episode. So it might be good getting into spring break time, summer. And as Todd says, natural wine is grown, not made. And so when you're really getting connected with the earth, the terroir, the natural characteristics of the season and the story of the growers, Dry Farm Wines is totally where it's at. And after our episode we recorded, I'm making a hard pivot to ensure that only old world wines are drank in my household.
Yes. All right. Before we get into today's episode, just a quick word about our Beat the Bloat live program. So if you're listening timely, you still got a couple of weeks to join us for this annual program. Beat the Bloat Live includes 4 live classes taught on April 10th, May 1st, May 22nd, and June 12th. And this is intended to carry you through our entire Beat the Bloat 6-week cleanse plus our 4-week gut rebuild. So really it's a 10-week program, plus you get a little bit of bonus support from the end of that. On our Slack program, you're going to be able to use our Slack to as a non-social media accountability and chat forum to ask us questions, to post about your cleanse, and you'll get a chance in all of those live classes to ask questions timely. So our Beat the Bloat cleanse is our kind of gut reset, yes, if you will, and this is intended toward dysbiosis of any type, so yeast, bacteria, parasite, you name it, and is a really great way, you know, annually to cleanse the gut to make sure your microbiome is working for you and not against you. And this program is only $99 to join us. You also get the Beat the Bloat ebook, which is valued at $9.99. You get access to our virtual classroom for a full 3 months, which is going to include handouts, additional resources linked, supplement recommendations, recipes, and so much more. And really the biggest value, I think, in the entire program is that you get access to us during that time of your program.
Yes. A lot of people may not be familiar with the fact that when you are resetting your microbiome or doing any form of a gut cleanse, that there are tools that are really essential to support detoxification and reduce the harmful effects of endotoxins. And endotoxins are liberated or released in the process of killing off or getting rid of yeast overgrowth, bacteria overgrowth, or even parasite. So in our program, we can handhold you through the process and help to upregulate maybe some nervous system support if you're having anxiety or insomnia because endotoxins can cross the blood-brain barrier. We can work with chelators for short term to bind, but also make sure strategically that this is not taken around times of minerals or throwing your electrolyte status off. We can influence with anti-inflammatory tools and proteolytic enzymes with our Inflamazyme product. There's so many different approaches, and I think that often this is where people kind of tip their toe in and they might have purchased our Beat the Bloat bundle. They may have read the ebook, but really taking things next level to ensure that you get over that hump of plowing the gut, but also getting rid of all of that sludge and debris is really essential to have favorable repollination or good microbiome balance. And we know that so many chronic diseases start in the gut and that the gut really can be the root cause of imbalance and driving undesired symptoms. We have seen across the board successful outcomes from, of course, improved digestion, resolution of bloating, getting the perfect poop, so no more constipation or diarrhea. We've seen amazing outcomes on clearer skin, including resolution of cystic painful acne to eczema to psoriasis and more. We've seen improved energy, mood stability with reduction of depression and anxiety. We've seen weight loss and influence on metabolic health, including blood sugar balance enhancement. We've seen better immune health and resilience from chronic infection. And we've seen big impact on cognitive clarity, reduced brain fog, overall reduced inflammation, and so much more. This is also just a really great time to focus on food as medicine for 3 months, reset your pantry, have a protocol and a plan that you're invested in, and we can't wait to have you join us. Again, only $99. Go on over to AllieMillerRD.com and grab a spot in our live Beat the Bloat class.
All right. Should we tell them about our live event, speaking of gut health?
Sure.
Let's do it. So on April 24th, if you are local to the Austin or Hill Country area, we will be hosting an event called Trust Your Gut. This is the second event in a series in combination with Zoe Medicinals and Zoe Market, and a really cool hybrid space out in Buda called Meridian. And we had about, 60 women at the last one. It was a kind of Galentine's Day focus on stress and libido. It was so much fun.
Yes.
So we're going to do it again on April 24th. The event goes from 6:30 to 8:30, but the doors open an hour prior of that, so you can come chat with us, ask us questions before we even get started, say hi, shop the market, which has so many cool staples, including the Naturally Nourished supplement line. It's one of the only places that you can get it off the shelf versus ordering from our website. And just a really cool, fun space to bring a girlfriend or your sister and learn about functional medicine.
Yes. So you can get a link to tickets. I believe they're only, I forget how much they're,
$20.
$20. Yep. So super affordable price point. And for those of you that aren't familiar, Buda is just a stone's throw from Austin, about a 30-minute drive from Austin. Also about, I would say, 30-something minute from San Antonio, maybe 45. So Austin, San Antonio, greater area, definitely worth it. Could even make a day trip out of it and come out from Houston or other larger cities. We'd love to meet you. Only $20, and I think you'll have a really fun time.
All right, let's get into today's topic. So a couple weeks back, that was episode 285, you shared the top toxic foods with glyphosate residue. And I don't know how either of us kind of either overlooked or maybe just didn't want to hear this fact. But, you know, we were aware that GMO crops are going to have the highest residue. We were very aware of wheat and other grains, certainly, but maybe didn't know that it's 85% of almonds that have highly toxic levels of glyphosate, and they are actually a heavily sprayed crop.
Yes. And, you know, I think it was really wild for me to see that. I guess I had never looked into it. Like you said, you know, corn and soy have been, you know, demonized by me on the podcast since it's aired back in 2016. And we've been talking about how Roundup Ready crops will have higher residue. And then yes, how now grains that aren't even Roundup Ready, so if that's wheat or if that's oats, how these are going to have higher industrial chemical application. But I was pretty shocked to see pistachios, almonds, grapes, which are pretty commonly consumed foods in our household, to be at the top of the list. And so we started to look into, basically like live as we're recording this episode, we were like, okay, well, shoot, let's look at every single almond product that we consume as household staples that I would say, you know, we both probably purchase multiple times a month in the world of things like Simple Mills and Siete products. And I started to kind of go down the rabbit hole on consumer sites that provide us third-party testing for glyphosate levels so that I could look into, all right, if not organic, where is the glyphosate residue on this particular product? We will link a couple of these sites in the show notes. So one was detoxproject.org. And another is GMO Free USA. I did see, for instance, Malk, which is a nut milk beverage. I don't drink Malk. I drink raw milk generally or organic coconut milk. But just noting that, because that is a brand that I've recommended. It's clean. It's Himalayan salt with water and almonds. And they are not organic almonds in the just standard one. But Malk was on there as far as not having glyphosate residue. I also saw Jovial pastas listed. And so especially now, this is not an almond product, but this would be a brown rice pasta or even their einkorn wheat, which is an heirloom variety. If gluten is not a concern for you or your household, it looks like that would maybe, as I'm seeing, be a better choice than looking into the almond-based Capello's pastas as a staple, because again, the Jovial has tested third party to be free. We saw our friends from Fond listed on there. We saw Nancy's organic products of dairy. And then I saw some brands that had small lists. So Siete, for instance, was on there with their logo, but the only items that showed up were the products that don't have almond in them. So I saw chili lime puffs, the fuego puffs, and the queso puffs. And so when I look at what we purchase from Siete, it's essentially the pink almond flour tortillas. That's is like true, our yeah. main staple. Because even like the chips, we don't do that often. We're going to do like crudettes and things. And so I might have sometimes the Siete chips in the household, but really it's the almond flour tortillas. So we'll cross that bridge in a moment, but that did not show to not have glyphosate residue. I'm not stating that I've seen evidence of testing on the Siete almond tortillas. I will state that clearly, but I'm just deductive reasoning and saying, well, if this brand paid to get featured and these three products weren't, then why wouldn't they have that? And then also Simple Mills was not listed on the detoxproject.org. So I went further down the rabbit hole there. And when I looked at GMO-free USA, they independently sent Simple Mills almond flour crackers to a lab. And there was high amounts of glyphosate actually in those crackers. So they did a comparison of the Simple Mills organic seed flour crackers and compared that to the standard blue Simple Mills almond flour crackers, the fine ground sea salt, which again, as we kind of called out, but I just want to reiterate this. If you look at the left corner of the box, it gives you that lovely butterfly for GMO free, because again, almonds are not genetically modified. Mm-hmm. They're heavily sprayed with glyphosate. So I think that just as a misnomer, I, as a consumer, was dumbing that down to just take the assumption of that butterfly of non-GMO to assume also that it's a low glyphosate product, but we have to really start to see that is two totally separate things. And if we know now with better research and understanding on the topic that there are only certain crops that are genetically modified, honestly, seeing that GMO free could be total lip service.
Right. It doesn't mean much on a product that was never GMO in the first place. I see that all the time, actually, where it's like, oh, potatoes, I don't think are genetically modified or whatever. So we have to take it a step further, it looks like, and look for the actual organic certification with these types of products, which means they haven't been sprayed with glyphosate, correct?
Yes. And I would say especially on a product that contains a staple ingredient, meaning one of the top five first listed ingredients, which in these crackers, it's a nut and seed flour blend where almonds lead, right? And so they actually saw that the almond flour crackers in a serving contained 47.9 parts per billion of glyphosate, which is quite high. And then if you look at the other product of the seed flour crackers, these have just an organic seed and seed flour blend, which is comprised of sunflower, pumpkin, and flax. And I just want to take this a step further because I think that seed oils get demonized quite heavily in the health space, but this is another maybe like misnomer of a halo effect where I could see someone being like, well, I'm not doing the seed flour crackers because hex to the seed oil.
Right.
I really think when we look at toxicity in the food system, the seed oil conversation has to still stay high integrity focused on the genetically modified seed oils of the blend oils of like Mazola, et cetera. We just ate out at a restaurant actually recently. And when talking to the server about seed oil free, she was extending that into things like pumpkin seeds and pepitas and, or pumpkin seed oil and pepitas. And, you know, again, good, better, best. I think the choice of pumpkin seeds, which are rich in zinc, have good plant sterol stanols. I don't think that there's a lot we're going to find down the rabbit hole of pumpkin seed toxicity.
Sure.
And I don't want to misnomer all seeds bad. Yes. And I think that's what happens in this world is we go kind of myopic and we have to take a step back and really weigh out cost of benefit and what we're actually looking to eliminate or reduce access to in our body.
Sure. Yep. And yeah, a whole seed versus an oil is a very different, you know, process, right? Mm-hmm. The seeds have not been processed, or maybe they've been, you know, dry roasted or sprouted, which is actually a good thing.
Sure.
Can reduce some of the anti-nutrients versus the extraction of an oil from said seed.
Yes. And then, you know, both of these crackers do use organic sunflower oil. But again, I think in a good, better, best spectrum, is there more linoleic acid? Yes. But if you're eating an otherwise paleo diet, sure. I'm not dying on that hill. I'm right. going to die on the hill that says glyphosate at 47.9 parts per billion.
Sure.
Because I think when I weigh that out, that's where I see a higher concern.
Yep. And I want to dig into that a little bit because Byron always gets me from his engineering, chemical engineer brain. He's like, well, did you look into like how many parts per million or per billion is the safe, acceptable limit? And I'm always like, well, I want zero.
Who's but determining that's, that?
You know, so let's dig into that. Like, what is the consensus of the limits? Have these changed over time? What is the safe amount of glyphosate?
Goodness. So the EPA, not surprising maybe to us, has a different legal limit than like environmental workers group
sure.
or other third party and non-funded by the companies that make the products, organizations that look at cancer research, etc. What's interesting about the EPA legal limit is it is food product specific. So we'll see, for instance, like the glyphosate limit on oats is at 30 parts per billion, which was set in 2008. And that's actually quite high. And this was well before the cancer findings of IARC, before a lot of the litigation went through with Monsanto, before they rebranded and sold their company to another pharma company, et cetera. And the Environmental Workers Group truly looks at when we are looking at maximum intake of glyphosate, that we should be at 0.01 milligrams per day. And so when we're looking at parts per billion or 0.01 milligrams consumed. And so if we're looking at daily intake limits, we're saying about 160 parts per billion of glyphosate should be what we're looking at that max. So if we're looking at someone that's eating oats for breakfast, if you just got that serving of these crackers with 47.9 parts per billion in the almond flour crackers, you're already almost at that halfway mark of your upper tolerable limit. And I think it can be quite easy to surpass.
Got it. And then, you know, if we think about other products like RX bars and things like that
right.
too, those are non-organic almonds. And I know we used to recommend those. We used to have them in the office like uh-huh. way back
yeah.
in the day as a, you know, better than. And we always have used that as an education point of like label lingo. And look, it's at least got, you know, half the grams of protein that it does carbs, blah, blah, blah.
And a whole food base. Yep.
And a whole food base. You can actually see the almonds mm-hmm. in it. But they are, you know, they are non-organic to my knowledge, right?
Yes.
Okay.
So maybe not appropriate in our child's lunch every day
yeah.
in addition yep. to the crackers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we have like the mini ones right now. The kids have been digging those for our travels and stuff.
Mm-hmm. There is a peanut-based one of those.
Okay.
And,
okay.
you know, we're actually not seeing peanuts listed high there. Now, there's its own can of worms of like,
right.
aflatoxin, and that's
right.
its own episode. But I think good, better, best that, you know, my choice is to like strategically rotate. And we'll get there in a moment. We'll talk kind of more pantry choices.
Yep.
But I think
yep.
that, yes, it can definitely add up. And then, you know, even like the almond butter, I looked right away. I'm buying like at HEB because almond butter that I'm getting ground in the store is just ground almonds.
Right.
And I'm like, no oils added, you know, of course, no sugars, no preservatives, but likely high in glyphosate.
Right. Right.
So probably want to shift then. That was one of my first purchases that night of the episode. I got a 5-pound jar,
oh,
a glass jar, because then I'm like, wow, yeah. leaching,
yeah.
la la la. A 5-pound glass jar of organic almond butter that is made from sprouted organic almonds.
Okay. We'll have to link that brand
yes.
In the Amazon store and do a little rehaul of
yes.
our Amazon store.
Yes.
All right. So lots of foods to consider and just, you know, starting to kind of look at what's in our pantry right now. What might we not buy again? What might we move to the upper shelf to
mm-hmm.
like use occasionally, but not as a daily staple. Yeah. Before we even dig into some of the swap outs, though, let's cover some other aspects of almonds. I think oxalates are like the big one
yes.
that comes to mind. And whenever we post like an almond flour
oh, gosh.
Recipe or that time that I think I posted Noah's lunch and somebody was like, I can't believe you would feed your child so many oxalates because he had like nut butter and blueberries and sweet potato or something like that.
Yeah.
Or maybe some greens, right? Yes. But what's the deal with almonds and oxalates?
Okay, so when we're looking at oxalate content, yes, almonds are also in the top 10 food sources to avoid if you're looking for a low oxalate diet. Now, I think we're due for an entire episode on oxalates and actually looking at randomized clinical trials and various other applications of, you know, like Dave Asprey will talk about high oxalates just like tear up your system and how aggressive they are. I think an individual with good gut integrity and functional kidneys and an individual that has not had a history of kidney stones is probably going to do okay with moderate levels of oxalate, especially in a balanced diet that has more of a Mediterranean approach and meets a good amount of animal protein intake. So, you know, the impact of oxalates, if we look at what's recommended by physicians for those that are at risk with kidney stones, which is the most known medical manifestation of an issue of oxalates or oxalate intolerance, if you will, they're looking at less than 100 milligrams a day. And it's estimated that most people get between like 200 and 300 milligrams of oxalates daily. I will say an ounce of almonds, so about 22 nuts, has 122 milligrams of oxalates, okay? And so if we are looking at, I mean, that's really just like a quarter cup, if you will, of almonds. And especially if we're looking at just ground almonds into almond butter,
right?
That could be just a large tablespoon.
Yeah.
And so that very clearly could be like a third of the day intake of oxalates. And then we do see oxalates from leafy greens and some anthocyanin rich produce items, et cetera. But we aren't sure that that's a concern for all people, right? And we don't throw out the baby with the bathwater in the sense that there are various ways to offset oxalate levels. So one issue, of course, is if the individual is dehydrated, oxalates are going to be much more abrasive and a lot more of an issue, especially if we're looking at stone formation. So the first thing you can do is drink enough water to help flush out excess oxalates. And we see oxalates passing in the urine, so we know that the kidneys are able to flush out oxalates. If an individual, again, has some form of renal disease or kidney issues, their kidneys may not flush out oxalates as well. And so then, yes, they may need to deeper restrict. But if you're drinking that 2 to 3 liters of fluid per day, filtered water, that should help substantially. The other big impact on oxalate is calcium. And so, yes, oxalates could be an issue if also a dairy-free paleo individual.
Sure.
But we do see study after study, especially even in those that have kidney stone, doing as a trial of supplementing with 1,000 milligrams of calcium, actually offsetting or reducing the impact of stone formation, which we would also make that assumption means that it's basically blocking that oxalate from creating damage in the body. And so when we look at calcium, I think that there are a lot of organic kind of combinations. Like this comes up on Instagram a lot. If again, I'm posting something like a tortilla with almond flour and it's like, well, yes, but there's also raw cheddar in there. Mm-hmm. And I feel very good about putting raw cheddar in there, which is a calcium rich food, which can bind with oxalates in the stomach and intestines before it can literally even get into the bloodstream. So if you're eating foods with calcium, that's a great way for oxalates to not even get into that gut blood barrier and process and pass through the colon. So we see this even in like adding leafy greens to a smoothie. Well, yeah, guess what? I put grass fed whey in all my smoothies.
Sure.
That's blocking the oxalates of my kale. Dave Asprey, you know, if I'm adding in my Greek yogurt to Stella's smoothie, I'm also going to add a super greens cube.
Sure.
And I'm not worried about that because she's getting the whole myriad of benefits of greens, of folate, of lutein. You know, we're not just demonizing one part of the nutritional component of this ingredient. Now, I will say when I was a vegan, if I was trying to eat greens for calcium, that didn't make sense because oxalates bind calcium and or vice versa.
Yeah.
Calcium binds oxalates. So you're not going to get calcium supplementation from eating greens. I get that. But adding calcium-rich foods to oxalate-based foods can also support blocking the oxalates.
Totally.
If that makes sense.
And yeah, if vegan or plant-based, you're probably also using a nut milk instead.
Yes.
And you're using probably more of the like nut cheeses in your things and, you know, more almond flour and butter, or there's a big old scoop of almond butter in that smoothie too. So that's kind of like an oxalate bomb.
Yeah.
So all the more reason to go raw milk, right?
Yes. Well, and to add insult to injury, if we're talking about a vegan or just a high plant consumer, especially in the raw plant mm-hmm. vegetation world, you know, they likely have more gut damage sure. and they likely aren't supplementing with collagen. They right. likely aren't drinking bone broth. They're not getting that gelatin and that gut support. So they have more of a vulnerable gut that's mm-hmm. going to transfer more oxalate into the blood.
Okay.
And so I think that there is something to be aware of, but I think that oxalates are being demonized in a unreasonable amount and that we're not taking a step back and looking at the actual application in the human body.
Yep.
And then we can take it a step further in the world of like almonds. And we know that per research that soaking almonds, so especially soaking and sprouting your almonds, this can reduce oxalate concentration upwards of 20%. And so that would be huge because again, oxalates are water soluble. So when you soak, you actually reduce. And we think of that like even with like phytates and sure. beans. And so soaking and sprouting has long-term been used historically in consuming these foods without even knowing the names of the anti-nutrients because of watching digestive
right.
experience and knowing that that also can increase the nutrient density of the food while offsetting that anti-nutrient. And then what's more is another consideration in your almond products. So that's why I went for the sprouted almond butter, right? Because it's already soaked. And then another thing to consider is blanched. So like if you're doing an almond flour, a blanched organic almond flour is going to be substantially lower in oxalate content than an almond flour that has the skin intact, which is where a majority of that will be.
Okay. And then I would call out supplementing with calcium
yes.
as another way, especially if you are, you know, dairy free or if you yes. don't tolerate dairy, or if you are, you know, a woman starting at the ripe old age of like 30, 35, we probably want to be supplementing with calcium daily. Anyway,
ripe old age.
Yeah,
I just
right.
don't like that.
I know, I don't either. But we know that bone loss starts to occur, you know, in yes. our early 30s mm-hmm. or mid 30s, especially if we're having babies. And so taking something like a whole food form of calcium in our osteofactors also would be a way to just, you know, have an insurance policy against some of that oxalate issue.
Agree. Absolutely. And so osteofactors would be fantastic to take like two a day as a baseline. And then if you have known calcium deficiency or risk of kidney stones, so that could be for men as well to call out. Mm-hmm. If an individual is dealing with kidney stones, 100% they should be on that three a day of the osteofactors. And the thing to call out about our osteofactors, which is so important to consider when you're looking at calcium
yeah.
supplementation,
yeah, yeah.
is it's not calcium citrate. It's not calcium carbonate. Some of these forms of calcium are very difficult to actually absorb and use in the body. This is an MCHC or microcrystalline hydroxycalapatite form. And this comes derived from grass-fed bone from New Zealand grass-fed cows. So where we're sourcing for our whey and our pure collagen, we're using that same New Zealand chemical-free grasses source of bone that actually has more bone growth factor and other benefits beyond the calcium itself. But it's also in a whole food matrix that is more bioavailable.
Yep. I think that's a really good thing to call out because those other inferior forms of calcium actually have been known to drive things like kidney stone. And
right.
especially when there's vitamin D and or vitamin K deficiency.
Yes.
So you probably want to be pairing that osteofactors with our vitamin D balance blend, which is going to contain D3 and K2 to drive that calcium where it's supposed to go in the body and not to places that it's not supposed to go and cause stone formation.
Yep. No doubt.
All right. So enough on the calcium conversation.
I think we'll do a whole oxalate episode because
yeah.
I want to talk about other inflammatory concerns,
totally.
What claims have been made and the actual research behind them. So stay tuned.
Should we get
the next
Should
20.
We get Dave Asprey on here? It sounds
I don't
like
know.
That'd be a fun debate.
Yes.
We could sit next to him in his
if
bathtub.
And or would it be like a Paul Saladino debate?
Yeah. I don't know.
That didn't go anywhere.
Anyway, so we're now at, you know, organic blanched almond flour is probably a safe bet. But for most, we can still do, you know, whole and ground forms too. I want to talk just the environmental impact of almonds, because this was also something, you know, I've been hearing for years,
yes.
like to grow the amount of water that it takes to grow one almond is something astronomical when compared to, you know, production of milk. And it was always
yeah.
this like comparing almond milk to cow dairy, which took me a long time to come around to. And now I'm a total believer.
Oh, yeah. in the raw cow's milk. That the impact of just the demand of almonds has, when you look at like a cow and its role in our agriculture as a ruminant and how this plays an integral element of regenerative agriculture.
Sure.
That when you divert from the cow to an industrial agriculture model where we're spraying tons of glyphosate on this crop and pulling tons of water, that just doesn't make sense for soil. It doesn't make sense for sustainability in the food system. And you know, there's so much out there now about like almonds kill bees and birds. Mm-hmm. And so first, let's just kind of, I think unpacking almond demand is interesting. Sure. And so, you know, production of almond products is way up. I was just at a restaurant yesterday and it was connected to a coffee shop and someone ordered their latte with soy milk. And Brady looked at me and he goes, do people still drink soy milk? Yeah. The barista was like, oh, we have oat, almond, and coconut milk. Uh-huh, and it's so interesting, right? Because like 5 years ago, you couldn't get almond milk anywhere and oat milk wasn't even a thing.
No, it wasn't a thing. And coconut milk was pretty new too, right?
So it's been this interesting progression. And so anyway, almond production has gone way up and it's a serious export crop, actually. I don't think a lot of us know that. So we're producing almonds in the U.S. not just for Americans. In 2022 alone, the U.S. almond exported to the world outside of our country $4.5 billion worth of almonds. And we're also then seeing a domestic consumption increase. So as of 2023, the domestic consumption of almonds amounted to be about 1.4 million metric tons worldwide. And according to this report, the global almond consumption was about 1 million metric tons just about 10 years prior. So an increase of about 40 million metric tons in a 10-year window. And that's also, you know, about a third of the amount that we're currently at today, right? At that 1.4 million. With this influx of consumption domestic plus the influx of exporting to other countries, this creates a really heavy weight on California specifically, which is where a lot of the almond farms are. We've seen through various forms of investigations, there's a documentary actually now out called Water and Power, A California Heist. And we've seen basically that there are water barons, if you will, that manipulate and exploit the state's most precious resource of water. And so there's individuals that are experiencing water shortage in their household. There's extreme drought and groundwater crisis. This is driving a huge impact where agriculture will be favored because of the financial investment and citizens are actually losing out on access of water for shower, cooking, drinking, etc. And then not to mention the water quality we're seeing substantially influenced because of that runoff from glyphosate. So the pesticides that are used on a large industrial scale are having an influence on water contamination. They are shown to directly kill bees, wasps, and birds. And we're seeing the gobbling up of 3.2 gallons of water. It takes 3.2 gallons of water to make, or 12 liters, one almond. That's
one.
The water
okay.
footprint.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. That's like the shock and awe part that I was seeing.
Yes.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
So, I mean, right. And that's the amount of water that's really necessary for like households to function.
Right.
You know, over that, they say a couple gallons a day per household member minimum. But really wild when you look at 3.2 gallons per single almond.
Yeah. Okay. So I think that has us kind of second guessing, you know, using maybe multiple forms of almonds in our daily diet. And I think this has, you know, become a reality in a lot of households for our children trying to sub out, you know, for better quality products. Unfortunately, we may be doing more harm than good. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about some of the actual shifts that you're going to be making in your household and what we can do at home to just lessen the impact. Again, I don't think it's like a black and white. We have to drop all almond products or all almond products are bad, but just thinking about the sustainability alone, I think there are some swaps that we could make.
Yes. And again, I think it's always good to pivot and recalibrate, look at updated information, and potentially apply changes from that based on what we're learning real time. And also to not get too myopic, right? Where you just make the assumption that because this is grain free, it's better.
Right.
And so, you know, when I was looking at particularly Siete, because tortillas are a thing in my house. I mean, we live in Texas, mm-hmm. and tortillas are something that, yes, I can do fajitas without a tortilla. I can do carnitas pan seared with an egg fried on them with some cabbage slaw. When I'm being super tight keto, I don't need a tortilla, but definitely my husband loves a tortilla and my daughter's going to have a tortilla because quesadillas with raw cheddar are one of the best ways that I can fit in a lot of protein and nutrient density.
And just easy for lunches.
Yes. So we can put 2 farm fresh eggs from our chickens, pasture raised bacon, raw cheddar, and even some chopped up green onion, whatnot, put that in one single Siete tortilla, and she can eat it like a handheld Hot Pocket on her way, you know, to school, whatnot. So I was immediately trying to find, okay, A, are we never buying the almond flour tortillas? Or B, am I limiting that to Stella can have 2 almond flour tortillas per week? What I've decided to do is we're going to purchase an equal part at this time in my household of the cassava and the almond flour tortillas. The cassava ones we don't like in our household as much. They just have a different toothiness, and they can be a little bit more difficult to get that pliability and like that, mm-hmm. that mouthfeel, I guess, that I like, or that pliability, I guess, is the right thing, right? And so we are going to, though, start playing with more of the cassava tortillas. And, you know, just to jump on that, on cassava, because that was then I had to go down the rabbit hole.
Yes, cassava. Is cassava GMO or sprayed heavily? Do we know?
It is not at this time.
Good.
And it's not listed in the top 10 foods, right? Okay. So the top 10 foods, again, were 100% of soybeans, 90% of oranges, 85% of almonds and figs and grapefruits and pistachios, and then it goes on. But cassava is not listed in the top 10, so that at least gives me peace of mind that it's under a 60%. I haven't seen a lot of third-party testing, but again, I would know that it's lower. And it is important to highlight, just if we look at the structure of cassava as a rhizome or, you know, a root vegetable, that they tend to have lower translocation of glyphosate actually, because the starch accumulation actually hinders that translocation and buildup of herbicide.
Right. And it wouldn't be sprayed direct because they're underground too. So it's at least not direct spray. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And, you know, so I felt good about that. So I was like, okay, so maybe we'll do that. And over time, maybe that will swap that out. And then also, you know, if I'm looking at like heirloom blue corn, that is one that we've had in the house anyway, maybe not weekly. I think that we would do like heirloom corn tortillas like once a month, but I think I'm going to allow that in a little bit higher. I have a friend out here who Erica hand makes tortillas, and they're so beautiful. And, you know, she has really good sourcing and I trust her resources.
Yeah, I can link the masa that she turned us onto because Byron loves it. I forget. I know what the bag looks like, but there's a blue corn one and then there's a non-GMO, just straight up regular masa. And Byron makes tortillas. We probably bust out the tortilla press, same thing, once a month because it's more laborious. Like you have to go through more of a process, but also that connects you back to the source of your food so much more too.
And I feel like it's a good blend because again, it's like the new age of cassava tortillas. I don't believe that those cassava, yes, as a tuber has been consumed ancestrally, but it's cassava tortillas, not really.
Yeah.
Heirloom corn, yes.
Yes.
You know, in the form of tamale, et cetera.
Right.
And so, and that whole, you know, nixtamalization process.
Something like that.
of actually like denaturing the anti-nutrients. Yes. All of that, again, goes back to traditional food preparation. So that's kind of my approach there is like our household will have much limited. I think we were honestly buying at least 8 packs a week of Siete tortillas.
Wow.
I mean, because it wouldn't be uncommon for Stella to have a quesadilla at dinner and a tortilla at breakfast.
Sure. Okay.
Honestly.
Okay.
And so we're blowing through them. And so it's what I'm going to limit to in our household is like 2 packs a month of the almond.
Yeah.
And like when that burns through, we're going to try to rotate the cassava in there. And then we're going to be getting from our friend the heirloom corn. And then over time, even further reduce the almond as we get more tricks.
Yep. Yep. I'm sure we'll find out, you know, and cassava too. It's like, you don't want to be consuming buckets on buckets of that. I know.
Agreed.
I hear from clients, a lot of people have GI issues with cassava, either bloating or constipation.
Yep.
So, you know, not relying too heavily on that either, but I think for kiddos, it's a good thing to have right. a tortilla of some form.
So that'll be in the mix.
Yep. Yep.
And actually Stella's favorite is the blue corn tortillas.
Okay.
So,
okay.
But again, I still want to keep that in rotation.
Right.
So that's how we're approaching
yep.
it.
Yep.
And then I gave, like I mentioned, well, I bought the big 5-pound jar of organic sprouted almond butter, and we'll link that in the show notes. And I gave my dog my almond butter that was from the grocery store. We will link an organic almond flour that is blanched. And then also I'm going to be using a little bit more hazelnut flour because it's just not as mass okay. produced mm-hmm. on an agricultural level. Again, didn't make the top 10 list. So I feel good about that. And that's one that like Bob's Red Mill has, you can get organic hazelnut flour too, if you want that double down. Mm. And most of the recipes that I've put out, I've even done a 50-50 blend of the two flours, and it really doesn't have an impact on texture, dryness. You know, there is not blanched hazelnut flour, so it'll add a different color impact mm-hmm. potentially mm-hmm. on some foods. But that's, I think, a really good clean option as well.
Totally. And then snack wise, I guess going for those Simple Mills seed crackers might be a better option than the almond flour crackers. Are you
yes.
ditching the crackers, or what are you doing about those?
Yes. So we are going to ditch the Simple Mills blue sea salt crackers.
Darn it. Those are the Costco.
Of course, say,
as soon as like they get to Costco yes. level, it's like you probably shouldn't buy it anymore,
girl,
right? Is the rule.
It takes me back to episode 350 in the what the bleep happened to our food system, right?
Yeah.
That's literally what one of my closing quotes was like, we need to stop relying on even these clean alternative products that are at Costco because it's still so centralized in
sure.
its production. It's so large scale at that point
right.
that the integrity just goes
right.
to crap.
That's true.
We saw that with Vital Proteins collagen, and that's why we had to come out with our own source of collagen.
Yep.
You know, we see that just kind of across the board. So I think although we like to see them putting their investments into chosen foods and certain brands that, you know, we like to purchase, we need to still be mindful of that label lingo and what are the things to not get hoodwinked by.
Sure.
And I'm no longer getting hoodwinked by the no GMO. I know that.
Yeah.
That butterfly doesn't tell me much.
Nope.
So we're going to be, yes, making a swap out to this seed. Well, she actually, the big thing, Becky, her classroom was nut-free.
Nut-free anyway.
So she didn't take Simple Mills to school.
Okay.
So that didn't really make a big change there. And, you know, it'd be more like at the household. So she's good with like organic mango. I did switch to only organic pistachios.
Yes. Yeah,
because
yeah.
that was a shocker to me. I was buying just like the wonderful palm.
Me too.
Or, you know,
again,
the one that's
Costco.
Available. Yes. And so Stella loves pistachio and mango. So we've always done organic mango because you can get organic mango dried at Costco. And now we're going to swap that for an organic shelled roasted pistachio, just dry roasted. So no added ingredients again. I also bought some raw pistachios that were organic. So that was a swap out we made in the household. And then I found a bunch of products. Like I got a sprouted trail mix by Lark Ellen Farm. So this is sweet and salty, and it's made with sprouted nuts and seeds. All of the ingredients are organic. So it starts with sprouted raw almonds, sprouted raw cashews, sprouted raw pumpkin seeds. It has organic maple, and this one is the sweet blend. So it has dark chocolate, dried cherries, coconut, and vanilla extract and sea salt. But, you know, pretty balanced as far as carb, fat, and protein. It's 10 grams of carbs, 4 grams of protein, 11 grams of fat. And so I bought this for Stella to try as something like if we're out at a distillery or out for a fun day at the park and she wants like a snacky, mm-hmm. crunchy thing. And so that's a swap out there. And I'm trying to think of otherwise. Other like cracker things, I think we really do crudettes, and she does really well with mm-hmm. raw veg. So we usually do like farmers market based vegetables like radish and organic carrots, etc. So
yeah, I'm going to have to go through my pantry with a fine tooth comb because we do have the, you know, convenience, and it's mostly for like on the go, in the car,
mm-hmm.
our air travel. We did like a ton of just meat sticks, you know,
yes.
I just go for relying more so on that stuff anyway than the crackers, which
right.
are pretty nutritionally devoid. It's just kind of
like,
yeah, it's a crunch. Yeah, it makes them feel like the other kids in their classroom, but like my children are young enough, they're not going to know that they're missing out
right.
on that stuff.
We also, for our travel, went back to some organic fruit leathers.
Mm-hmm.
Again, just for ease, light backpack, because of the long hikes, and we wanted, you know, good blood sugar source for Stills. So, you know, just simple ingredients. And I think, yes, focusing on protein is key. And as we always say, carbs will find you.
Right.
So swapping out some of these starchy carbs, you know, I think that if you tolerate doing like a sourdough cracker would sure. be really great. And so whether you're making your own sourdough and you're using your starter and or your, what's it called, discard.
Mm-hmm.
I've made discard crackers with a gluten-free sourdough base. And you know, or if doing like a sprouted sourdough with an heirloom variety of wheat, like an einkorn,
sure.
that could work fine. And there's a couple brands out there that make those. And I think that that might be, again, going back to more of a standing the test of time
right,
food,
right?
Thinking of traditional. And I think that that's an important consideration as we look at selections that are staples.
Yep. And watching the source of, it sounds like our sorghum flour, our rice flour, like all of those
yes.
things too, that they are indeed not just non-GMO, but also organic,
mm-hmm.
Right? All of that. If we are doing like, I'm thinking about the gluten-free bread that
yes.
I made an Irish soda bread yesterday with a bunch of those gluten-free flours, and I don't
yes.
know for sure if my sorghum was
my
organic.
My sorghum is not organic,
okay.
and I did see that that's a high GMO
yep.
one. Yep.
yep.
It's like
okay.
up there with beet.
Okay.
So I know. We'll link that if,
more
by the time
into.
This goes live.
Yeah.
If we find an organic sorghum flour,
there is
we'll
one
send
on
that
Amazon,
too.
Yeah.
Brown rice flour I've found easily organic, mm-hmm. And so that's what I've been using. And I think that there's a whole episode actually I plan to share also on like sourdough bread. What's mm-hmm. my perspective? Is it mm-hmm. good, better, best? And where are we at with the contribution of yeast and dysbiosis and all the things? So stay tuned on that as well. But to wrap things up on Almond Deep Dive, I think that when we look at the influence on our water supply, on our environment, I don't see the benefit of almond milk. I would go for a quality A2 grass-fed, raw, or low-heat processed dairy milk. And then that opens up, of course, the world of raw cheeses and quality probiotic-rich yogurt, of course, that goes back to more traditional following the test of time foods. So get away with your almond dairy product alternatives and swap those back to the real thing. I would say if looking at nut butters, maybe rotate your almond butter with other nut and seed butters of other whole food based sources, but do ensure that it is organic and ideally sprouted. I would say play with variety of tortilla or go tortilla-less when possible. And I would say as far as snacky foods, weigh out, is there an organic alternative? And then just weighing out that good, better, best of can we get back to a single food as much as possible and create these simple homemade trail mixes or combinations of dried fruit with meats, etc., that really does away with relying on this centralized production to feed your household anyway.
All right, that does it for today. If you like this episode, please go ahead and share it with a friend or a family member who might be eating a few too many of the almond products. And go ahead and leave us a 5-star review wherever you listen to the Naturally Nourished podcast. Catch you next week.
Thank you for listening to the Naturally Nourished podcast. Visit our blog at alliemillerrd.com for recipes, wellness tips, and food as medicine meal plans. Connect with Allie and Becky at AllieMillerRD on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Until next time, stay nourished and be well.